Welcome to our series of shows about mental health in association with Lambeth Public Health with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon, OBE. On today's show, we will be discussing black men and their mental well-being. Joining us in the studio, we have Tony Seeley, who is an arts development practitioner, consultant, trainer, and community champion.
I've known you for a number of years, and you work in the performing arts and community development and community radio. But also, I know you've always had an interest in mental health. What was your initial interest in mental health, and particularly around black men?
Well, I think, thinking back, looking at my own neighbourhood where I live in Brixton, and then drawing in more closely, looking at my own family, I seem to be the, I suppose, in one way, the only person that is sort of quite functional, that is, with the way I look at mental health. My sister has spent probably about 40 odd years now sectioned in a home. My brother, Clive, has spent about 30 years living with psychosis. My older brother died a few years ago from other mental health issues. And I suppose from a young age, I've noticed these conditions and situations with not only my family, but people around me closely growing up. And I just wanted to get away from it all. So I just kind of stuck my head a bit like an ostrich in the sand, but I did it in a way that was being creative and finding ways to express myself through creativity. And I'm glad that I did that.
Tony, you speak very openly and touchingly about your family members who've been affected by mental health. I went to see your production that you had in Brixton called What's Killing Black Men, and it was extremely powerful and thought-provoking. What drove you? Well, I know your family issues, but what was the underlying reason why you decided to create this powerful production?
I suppose I was really interested in working with older men, certainly of my age. I'll be 55 next year, still young.
Still young.
And I knew that a lot of the men of my age were experiencing mental health issues. So I was particularly drawn to work with men around mental health from the beginning of this year. I started a play with mental health early this year, and that was the first part of a series of work that I'm planning to do, looking at mental health, and that was particularly with the sort of slightly older group of men, sort of 60 to 70, to be honest, because I still feel that there are issues to be explored there, and I was concerned that cohort does not have a voice. So I made a play that looked at some of those kind of issues around mental health with that older group, which I believe, Patrick, you came to see.
Yeah, it was quite powerful, again, because I think what's interesting is your practice. Because do you want to explain your practice of theatre and how you bring in lived experiences? Because I think this is quite important.
So I often go about making any topic, subject, issue by using just a participatory kind of way of working. And I suppose it's just come from ways of finding how to involve audience members in the experience of what they're watching. And I'm very much interested to work in the way that gives the audience member an immersive experience of what they're watching. And because equally, I believe that the audience have a view and opinion on what they're watching, but also critically, moreover, they have an idea which in my mind is more part of the solution and the way forward. And so I want to involve their views and opinions to solve what they're seeing before them.
It's funny you actually say that, because for me, that was the standout moment for me when I was watching the production, was seeing members of the public being invited up to sort of reenact a part of how they would handle a situation differently. I found that extremely, extremely moving, because sometimes you're thinking, okay, for example, the situation with, what was the character? Oh, the character, the boy who was going through his trauma.
Joe,
that's it. And you might be thinking, okay, I would do it this way. But then involving the audience, getting them to come up and say, well, I would do it like this, or I would do it like this. I would act out what I would say, how I would perhaps do my body language. It makes you realize that sometimes what you're thinking is right, the right way to handle a situation, is in fact maybe not. And I got so much out of that audience participation in your production.
Yeah, I think for me, the aim is to invite people to solve the problem that they see in the scenes. But I think doing this for many years, I think when people come up and one person tries to solve, has an idea of how to solve something, I mean, this is the call to action. This is what we need to do to mobilize people to try to, you know, step forward and solve something. But that idea that they have around solution, around change, is witnessed by other audience members, which hopefully inspires them and motivates them to have they should have a different way that they think that problem can be solved, because it's just not one way that we need to look at our experiences, and not one cap will fit all. So one person coming up and trying to solve the problem in their way is great, and that hopefully should inspire others. And then you find that other people will have a different way of solving that same problem as well. So it's like a domino effect. It should motivate people in the audience to see that I have also a different way to solve this problem, which is valid, and by the end of the experience we can all learn that there are many ways to solve this problem that we're watching.
Yeah. What's been the public's reaction to the play?
It's just been blowing up, to be honest. Still, we're getting lots of. I'm getting lots of emails from different people who saw it. There was my Facebook page has got lots of comments. The people that attended the event didn't want to leave afterwards. Lots of people stayed outside for more than half an hour, chatting away about what they had experienced. And from what the men are saying, they're being spotted in the local neighborhood, and people are coming up to them and saying, I saw you on Tuesday night in that play. So they're experiencing a lot of sort of public engagement.
Which is good. And I think as well, a takeaway point is that afterwards, people were just so open to discuss their mental health.
Colourful.
Lambeth Mental Health Radio Show.
Colourful Radio.
Hi, this is Sinai Fleury at the What's Killing Black Men theatre performance at Brixton Library by Tony Seeley, which was all about mental health and suicide. And I'm here with two members of the public who decided to attend this event. Can you just introduce yourselves for me by telling me your name and where you're from and what brought you to this event today?
Oh, hello, my name is Sergey. I'm from Streatham, and I came to this event because I saw it on a flyer.
And you, what's your name and where you're from?
My name's Miles, I'm from Balham, and I came to this event because Sergey invited me.
Okay, now this performance was about mental health and suicide, especially with black men. What did you make of the whole production?
When I was watching the drama performance, I found it really difficult to watch, mainly because it was so harrowing to see the situation that Joe, the main character, was going through. And it just felt so real and vivid that it was almost, just really difficult to watch. And it really struck a chord with me. And I honestly do feel changed by just watching the performance. I really want to kind of just, I guess, be there for people in my friendship group, I guess people that are in my sphere of influence, to try and, I guess, support people, because sometimes people don't really feel that supported.
Well, I think it taught me to sort of not take people how you see them and to sort of think about what they're going through. And for me especially, it was when the main character mentioned his uncle. And, like, at the beginning, I thought the uncle was the one that got it together. But it makes you think that everybody's hurting, but that they're hurting in different ways, and it's sometimes it's very hard to see.
I mean, do you think personally there's enough help and support out there for black men to deal with their mental health and their well-being?
I think there is definitely support out there. I don't know if people know about the support that's out there. I know personally there are quite a few mental health charities. I personally volunteer with the charity in Tooting. But I don't know if... I think there's a disconnect between like what is available and... I guess people actually knowing what facilities are actually out there for them.
I think that there could be, but I think the main problem is that even if there was, I think it's quite hard for black families to sort of understand like how a mental health, what mental health is and how it affects someone. So I think somebody who might be suffering from it, they might find it quite difficult or reluctant to perhaps go out to find that help. For fear of what maybe their family might think.
And I mean, for both of you, I mean, have you personally experienced anybody that you know sort of having a mental health crisis or going through some sort of depression for both of you?
Yeah, I have.
And I mean, how did you deal with that? I mean, what sort of support did you give them and did you find it? Of course, you must have found it difficult.
Well, it was actually my uncle in my family has been struggling with mental health. So I guess when I was growing up, I wasn't really aware of what exactly he was going through. But of late, I've just tried to just educate myself about mental health, because before I used to think of mental health, I guess, in like a negative way. But I realize now that we all have mental health. And I guess it's just like physical health in the sense that it's something that you have to take care of. So in short, I'm just trying to be a bit more supportive of the people around me.
Yes, I've had a friend who suffered from mental health issues, and I found it quite difficult because they were made homeless, and I found it virtually impossible to get them into a shelter or into safety. And they eventually managed to find shelter, but it was incredibly difficult. Just if someone is homeless, only the borough can help them. And if the borough can't help them, no other borough in London is willing to help. And that was very hard to go through.
Okay. And finally, before you go, I mean, you've just seen the production. What are your lasting memories from it? What's the thing that you take away from seeing this play?
So I think for me, definitely, it was just seeing all the men and how they're trying to react, how to help the main character, how they couldn't help, and they are all reflecting their own problems onto him and making the situation worse. That's what really stuck out for me.
What stuck out for me was there was a scene at the very end of the play where the main character Joe was being surrounded by a lot of people that were kind of, I guess, speaking into his head and giving him a lot of different types of thoughts and, I guess, yeah, very conflicting situation. And what I took from that is just that I guess sometimes it's better not to talk at people but to really try and listen to where they're at. So that's what I took from that.
Okay, thank you so much for your comments. Hi, this is Sinai Flairy, still reporting at the What's Killing Black Men theatre production at Brixton Library. Can you introduce yourself and tell me where you're from, please?
My name's Sandra. I'm a resident of Lambeth. I have been a resident barring 2 years, so that's about 50-odd years. And I've got a son. It's just like Joe at the moment. He's 16. They tried to label him in primary school and I wasn't having it. And I let him take all the tests. He passed everything. But he wasn't put in any particular box. He's now doing A-levels. But suicidal, maybe, at the moment, and I'm dealing with that. And his dad's just like that dad, but he's a good dad.
Okay, and after seeing the play, what was the thing that you took, what did you take away from the production most?
I thought it's actually in sort of highlighting what our children have to put up with, you know, and us as parents should be more supportive, but some of us are like the dad, especially his dad, and sort of, you know, well, you should, he always say, you're playing the fool, but he's not playing the fool, you know, and he's doing A-levels, which they said he wouldn't even reach, what is it, the lowest of the low, and he's got good grades. Every test he's doing is passing, but he's still got little issues that we're dealing with. As a mother, I'm dealing with it, and I'm classed as bipolar. I am. I've seen you before.
What do you think? Do you think there's enough support for the black community in terms of their mental health?
No, because it wasn't for me. I was labelled, well, I was sectioned more than once, and my son is now sort of going through that sort of thing. He hasn't been sectioned yet, but he's in that sort of mental thing, social workers and all them people. But he's still studying at the moment, and I don't want that to stop. So I'm sort of listening to him, as I always do, and working with him and trying to coax his father into listening to him and, you know, not saying he's a fool and he's not listening to the teachers, which...
I mean, you just mentioned there that you yourself have had mental health issues. How did you sort of get through them?
Well, I had to. They sectioned me out to go through the system, and I was like... dancing. I got the consultants dancing. I got the whole ward dancing. At first, when I go in, I'm quite difficult. They don't like me on the wall because I'm very stroppy. And then they warm to me because I get everybody dancing and singing, and I do what I'm supposed to do. But yeah, you do get injections, and when you don't, they force you with tablets. I was almost drowned in one institution, and it was, yeah, it's a long story. But I'm trying to not get my son into that, yeah, because that was, I was 30 when I was, I'm now 57, so he's 16. So I don't want him to go down there. I don't think he would be able to handle what I had to go through. Yeah.
Okay, just going back to the play lastly before I let you go, what was the most memorable moment of the play for you?
I think Joe's friend, being a friend. He has got a friend like that. He's an African guy, I'm sure is it, Naeem. And he talked to him, and Naeem listened, and he listens to Naeem, and he's always somebody he could, and he needed a friend, he needed a mother, he needs a father. He's got us all, and yeah.
Thank you so much for speaking to me today, and I wish you all the best and your son as well. Can you introduce yourselves for me?
Yeah, sorry, my name is Jacqueline, and I'm very concerned about what's going on with black mental health, especially our men and our women, our families, right? We're outraged at what's really going on with Kendall Mines as well, because they've shut the black groups down and they've let the black people out on the streets. It's not fair, right? And we need to really be looking to see. There's very few groups open up now that are really representing the black mental health or black unwell people, because the system has made us all unwell. 1 minute. And basically, we need to be calling a massive conference. When I say a massive conference, we need a big black conference with black people to so we can have a platform so we can share what's going on with us and what's really happening to our families, because if we don't support this, it's happening to our boy children, it's happening to our grandchildren, it's a whirlwind. There's so much children who's been excluded on the streets, right, who's been killed. So we really have to make sure that we call Lambeth, Suffolk and all these other boroughs to account, because they are the cause of a lot of our mental health. And it's not through the medication, it's through the hospitals, the exclusions, the imprisonment, the unjust, the injustice, the, you know, it goes on with people's jobs and stuff. But we need this, and we need it as soon. Yes, and that's all I've got to say. Lambeth Council, And Southwark and all of you councils, you need to get it together. Okay, thank you very much. I'm also joined outside by another sister who's going to be sharing her thoughts on mental health and suicide within the black community. Please introduce yourselves for my listeners.
Okay, my name is Olatunde. I'm from the borough of Kensington and Chelsea. And my problems with mental health is that we still have numbers of our people who are putting mental, we're highly sectioned, we're given more medication. Our black men are more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia. We've got a lot of our sisters that are also being put in these institutions as well, and we're mostly diagnosed with bipolar now. This seems to be the new one. And I believe that we've got an organisation like Black Mental Health UK. And I think that if you've got an organisation like Black Mental Health UK, the definitive word here is black. We need to know, what is Black Mental Health UK doing in order to address the issues that we are facing in our community? We've got a high number of black suicides, and that's, we found out today that suicides are not counted by race. So we don't even know how many of them. I wonder why that is. I wonder why that is. So we need to be able to get these people accountable. So my sister, I hope today brings forth fruit. And I do believe 2020, as they say, is vision. Yes, next year is 2020. I hope that we do get together. We have conferences. We get Black Mental Health UK there. We get government ministers there. And we talk about the issues. We get the police force there. Because a lot of our people can get brought in on a section 136. That's when the police come, pick you up in the street and handcuff you and put you in hospital. And we also need to talk about the medication and the what's happening with medication and what it's doing, the side effects of medication on our people. A lot of the side effects of the medication for our boys and girls, guess what? Impotency. What does impotency mean? It means you cannot create. Okay.
Thank you so much for that passionate speech. Could you just tell our listeners who you are and what you do?
So my name's Steph Abra and I'm a public health specialist from Lambeth Council. I work with Black Thrive and I work on mental health promotion and suicide prevention.
What did you make of tonight's production at Brixton Library?
I thought it was a really powerful production and really great to hear from men about their real life experiences throughout life, which contribute to mental ill health and how the system and the systems that we have are contributing to that too. So I suppose it's really important for us at the council that we commission these kinds of events, is to really listen carefully to what people are saying and reflect on our own practice and how we might be contributing to some of that along with all the other services. So working with Black Thrive and the council, we want to see whether we can make a difference in terms of accountability for all of this. As well as a lot of people said tonight, that communities also have to take note. Parents have to take note. I think it's about relationships and how they start off. We've all been shaped by our history, but we have to break the cycle.
I mean, for you, what was the standout moment of the production for you tonight?
I suppose that there wasn't one moment, but I really enjoyed the audience intervention. I thought it was really amazing how, you know, the scenes were replayed and members of the public were able to come and have a go at seeing whether they could change the whole course of the play, of the life. And many, many people struggle with that. And it's because the forces that surround us when we're dealing with our mental health are really strong and very difficult to deal with.
I mean, in particular in Lambeth, you mentioned previously that we don't really have a high rate of suicide, but any suicide is one too many. What sort of things can the community do to support people in their families, in their communities who may be having mental health issues? What sort of advice would you give them?
I would say that if you notice that someone is behaving out of character, they're not behaving in a way that you would expect them to, if they are looking like they're not connecting with you and not engaging, that you should ask them simply how they're doing and try and start a conversation and start a meaningful conversation. And it's not something that experts need to be engaged in. We can all have that conversation. And I think, you know, there's this idea that suicide is going to be a very difficult issue. Actually, we know that total strangers can save people's lives by having those conversations. They can give them hope. And I think one of the main things is that people lose hope. And so in order to prevent suicide, we have to have hopeful conversations and connect people both to their communities and to services. And in Lambeth, we've recently had a service redesign. We got a single point of access and people can look up that number on the internet and be very quickly connected into a range of services, which now include, most recently, crisis outreach services. So you don't always have to, you know, suffer at those times when there is no one around and you've got a crisis. You've now got a crisis service in Lambeth that's operational.
Thank you so much for speaking to me today.
Thank you.
Hi, could you just tell me your name and where you're from?
My name's Atiba. I'm from Trinidad and Tobago and St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Ah, okay, fantastic. My mum's from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. What brought you out here to this event, What's Killing Black Men, the theatre production at Brixton Library?
Yeah, what brought me out here to this event was Tony Seeley. Great man. I came along to, I was a part of the theatre production. I came along to, I've been a part of the rehearsals, the building up of it. I was able to sort of, one of my brands, Are You Listening? I was able to sort of utilize it alongside the whole production. I built up the WhatsApp forum behind it and got the guys in there and kept on building and pumping that energy to keep the momentum going. Tony Seeley is obviously what brought us all out here overall. And yeah, What's Killing Black Men? Obviously, it is a big issue within our community in regards to mental health awareness. Being a part of that focus group was with the various black men. It was very powerful to get different insight. To get different insight into what different people felt, and basically allowing us to sort of move forward as a unified front.
Okay. Now you're a black man yourself. Yeah. What sort of pressures do you think are on the black man's shoulders that people probably don't understand?
Well, there's a lot of pressures on the black man. With me personally, my phrase is I'm alive and well on a day-to-day basis. Or as one of my sisters said, showed me the other day, I'm breathing in prana air. Yeah, so that's something that I've learned recently and stuff like that. So I'm alive, I'm well, I'm happy, I'm good. I'm moving forward, and I feel that it's very it's very powerful to obviously, yeah, it's just there's a lot of things killing us. Sorry.
Do you think black men open up enough about their mental health, or is this idea that you always have to be strong, masculine, and don't show your feelings, is that damaging towards black men and their well-being?
We are always defined in a negative light. Within the system as a whole, and the very fact that we're always identified. Can you do that question again? Because obviously that put me on. Do that question one more time.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to ask you the question again. And I was saying, as a black man, you're often perceived to be like really strong and masculine and hide your feelings. Do you feel like that is damaging towards a black man's well-being and mental health?
Obviously, being always having to be always showcased as being this strong masculine man when we do have our own emotions to obviously fight with and our own priorities. We were all born as babies. That's what I go back to. We were all born as babies. So at some point, we all cried. We've all shed a tear. So it's like it's very damaging when for a black man that has to hold in their tears, etc.
And I mean, speaking from like maybe your personal experience with family or friends, have you sort of had to deal with any mental health issues in your family or with close friends?
Mental health issues going on all the time, even including myself, you get me, type of thing. Obviously, I've been through, like me personally, I've been inside of the system. This is the reason why I'm very much about building and that's why I'm here representing. Are you listening today?
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, you just mentioned there you've been through some mental health issues yourself. I mean, what helped you through? What was like the one thing or the couple of things that really, really made a difference to you to sort of pull you through those dark moments?
We're always going through something where the system's going to define us as being a bit crazy or loopy in another sort of realm and stuff. But one thing that always helped me through is the fact that I keep saying I'm alive, I'm well, I'm breathing in prana air, like one of my sisters said to me the other day. Those are things that have helped me to sort of maneuver forward within the system, type of thing.
And then finally, my last question for you is, what advice would you give to black men and women out there who may be going through something, who don't quite feel themselves? What's the advice you would give them?
Breathe. Say I'm alive. Say I'm well. Say I'm breathing in that fresh prana air. Move forward. Look to the sky. Give thanks. Get me, type of thing. Try and eat well as much as possible. Obviously, that's hard as well. And yeah, just maneuver forward, mum.
Thank you so much for speaking to me.
My name is B, and I live in South London.
Okay, and can you tell me why you came to this production tonight?
This is my second time. I know Tony Seeley, and it was brilliant the first time I saw it. So I told other people about it, and they came along, and they enjoyed it. They thought it was very, very good. And I think in particular the Q&A is always important, and we get to learn so much from each other as well.
What was the standout moment from the production for yourself?
The standout moment, I think, was when Joe was at school and he was talking to all those, the different people involved in the education system and how they treated him. And what was great was when we had the session where members of the audience could come along and give a different perspective, because we can learn from each other. So that kind of did it for me.
And do you think there's enough support and help for the black community when it comes to their mental well-being?
I don't think so. If you look at the data for Lambeth, it's pretty appalling. And I think we need to learn to work with each other and help each other. The same way you find it in other communities. Some people might think I shouldn't say this, but you look at the Jewish community, they work with each other. You look at the Asian community, they work with each other. I think we can work with each other a bit more than we do already. I don't know if that makes sense. You know, so if I see someone and they need help, just because they might look a bit rough, I'm not going to look at them scornfully. I'll go up and offer help. I just always have done. And I just wish, you know, we could all do that. I'm not boasting or anything, but I just wish we could all just help one another.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your comments.
Hello, my name's Angela. And what brought me to this event? Well, I did get a WhatsApp message about tonight. I tapped on it and all the tickets are gone. And I knew I desperately needed to be here today. And the reason why is because my brother, he suffers with mental illness, or that's the label that they gave him. We've gone through a journey with my brother, and he has struggled. Now he's homeless. It seems like all the systems have failed him. Okay, so I thought, no, I've got to come here to see this play. I know that this place will be filled with people who are interested and who wants change and who wants to help. And that's why I came here today.
What was the standout moment for you in the production?
The standout moment for me was the section where he was with all of his friends and the uncle came, the friend was there, and they were trying to encourage him not to be taking the drugs, but he didn't want to listen, okay? Then there's the other side of it where he's got his so-called friends. You see, when I saw that segment of the play, it just took me back to my brother again, because he's also going through exactly the same thing. So I related to that. You know, my older brother arrived to see my brother high on drugs, and his friends were just sitting there laughing with him. My brother was screaming, rolling about on the floor, holding his head, and his friends were just sitting there watching him. Where my older brother, he ended up in tears. We never saw him like that before. But we knew that he was on some type of drugs that we've never seen, never heard of, don't know what he's taking, and this is a vicious cycle. And he's still trapped in it, you know. I'm in the process of writing off to the MP where he lives, because something needs to be done. A lot of families let their loved ones, like my brother, just fall on the wayside and they give up, but we're not giving up on him, because something needs to be done. He was falsely diagnosed with schizophrenia. He was in he was sectioned, and when he was sectioned, they found out years later that he shouldn't have been in there that long. They kept him in there until he ended up having to sue them, and he won. Because what they do is they keep you in there as a model patient, because they don't need to work on you when they should be letting you out. And when they first arrive, like my brother, he was going through a depression because he lost his best friend. But with the doctors, the white doctors that our black brothers are going to see, they have no idea who we are. They diagnose you with schizophrenia when really you're just having a breakdown, probably, or slightly depressed. So you might need a little bit of counselling or support. But instead, they put you in these places, chuck the needle in you, and then your body ends up relying on the drug that they've given to you in the first place. And then when they release you, they put you in a halfway house right on the red light district, where there's drugs and where their only friends are the people who are on drugs.
And so it's like a vicious cycle. They're all over again.
That's it. Vicious cycle, you know. We stuck by my brother, but it was very hard, because he was just like the Joe in the play, didn't want to hear. The parents, the father, was exactly like Joe's father, you know? That's why I related to all of that that's in the play, yeah.
Now, as somebody who's sort of been through the whole process with your own brother, what sort of advice would you give to other black families in Lambeth and around the UK about dealing with a family member who may be having a mental health crisis or maybe going through some sort of depression? What sort of advice and tips would you give?
Well, what I would say is, when you do have a child, I think that we should spend more time studying our children. I think that we should communicate with them, because it really does start from there. It's about the communication, because on top of that, my son, he went through changes, and because of what my brother went through, I had a fear, because I saw that my son was different. I was wondering whether he would have the same problems, right? So I studied him even more so. I noticed that he was different. And then when he went to college, he got thrown out of college because of his timekeeping. And I was what you would call old school with my son. I used to shout at him a lot because I was frustrated, because I'm a single mom. And I was frustrated because of thinking about myself. I was quite selfish, thinking about what people would think about me with my son being thrown out of college and thinking that I'm not doing the right thing. So when he got thrown out of college, we managed to find another one for him. He actually had to get 100% to get in there, and he came out with distinction. He finished university just with 1 year with his bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering, and that taught me a lot, because I realised that when he went to college, I took him aside, sat down with him, and we said, let's go back in time. Let's talk about all the things that we've both gone through so that we can understand each other. And I learned so much from my own son. He says, Mom, the times when you says, why haven't you moved from that spot, timekeeping, he says he had to watch the dial on the clock go round to the 9, and if it went past the 9, it would go round again. I didn't know that was happening because I never spoke to my son about it. He says, Mom, when you used to send me to bed, I used to flick the light switches to a sequence, right, before I could go up to bed. I didn't know about that. He says, Mom, I used to hurt myself and I was suicidal. I didn't know about that, right? He says, Mom, when you used to say, move the glass from the edge of the table, I needed you to say why. But as a big son, I thought it was just common sense. But he needed me to say that. I didn't know about that. So there's so many things we don't know as parents. And if I hadn't have had that conversation with my son, I don't know what he would be like today. Because I'd still be putting pressure on him, because I'm looking at him like everybody else. But he is different. We are unique. And he's a genius. Now he's got his bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. He's a self-employed financial analyst. He is different. He's a genius. And I tell him that all the time. That's what we need. We need the communication from a young age. We need to study our kids, study their behaviour, but don't be angry with them. Talk to them. Find out what we can do to help them. Find out if they're okay. Find out what's going on at school. Find out if they feel different. Anything. Just watch your child, and if there's anything different about them, talk to them. Be gentle with them. Don't bring the old school, some of them old school, you know what I'm talking about, back in. We need to communicate. That's the biggest thing. And then we can watch them grow. I'm so proud now. But my brother, I'm working on that. I'm working on the MP. I'm writing her a letter. And I'm going to explain all these things that we've learnt in this play and all the things that they could do and could be doing for some of our black brothers and our black sisters. The diagnosis is wrong, for a start. Some of us just need some counselling. Some of us need some understanding. And some of us need some black workers to work with our black brothers and sisters who understand us. Yeah? And also, they need, the ones that are on drugs, they need to go in drugs rehabs so that they can be helped. And when they placed in a home, not on the red light district, not on the drug district, because they need to get away from some of them friends that are like that. They need more support. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been so insightful hearing your story with your son and also your brother, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Colourful.
Lambeth Mental Health Radio Show.
Colourful Radio.
So I feel like your play definitely started a lot of conversations that night that are probably still going on right now, which are going to probably help a lot of people.
Yeah, I believe that's the aim, you know, is to get people to talk about what's going on so it becomes normalized. The aim is to really get people talking with each other about the views and opinions, and certainly around what they could do, and in terms of empowerment. That's exactly the whole point of the play, is to get people talking and collectively mobilize people together. Because ultimately what I was really trying to do, if we had a bit more time, was to invite, well, if I had time, I would have got some counselors and some lawyers and a few more activists to look at the laws around mental health. I don't know, Patrick, you've been involved in this for a very long time, but it feels to me that that audience there on Tuesday night, if we could have asked them about what needs to change, I'm sure they would have made some recommendations, some suggestions on ways forward. And that's what I would have liked to have had as an extra part of the performance, is just to go down that sort of political side to look at, you know, change around mental health.
I mean, what's interesting, because the play took place in Lambeth Library, and it was a full house, over 200 people there. And do you think that when you decided to put together this production and to recruit the men, and actually it'd be interesting to find out with our audience how did you recruit and convince men to be part of this process? You know, men don't always want to get involved in a particular subject like mental health, and some of them were using their lived experience. How did you convince them to be part of this? And the second part is, if you were to do it again, and you had a bigger opportunity with more resources, where would you do that?
So I was asked to put the play together, and I was working with other agencies in Lambeth. I won't go to mention any of their names, but unfortunately, none of the agencies actually referred or recommended or invited me to work with any of their clients, users. And to be honest, I wasn't really relying on that method of engagement because, you know, when you live and work in an area, you know people and you just go about it in your own way. So I have my own ways of community engagement. So to be honest, I just decided to just stick with what I knew works in all of the previous projects that I've worked on, is just to go out into the community. So I specifically aimed to go into lots of the bookies and the pubs where I knew a lot of the men would be hanging out. And sometimes some of the barber shops I went into, and it was really just going up to them and just having a conversation about mental health and being open and saying, look, I'm starting this thing. You don't have to get involved, but if you did, what would you be interested in? And I was amazed that it did start a lot of conversation with men. Men started to open up. I said to them, look, there's two ways that you could get involved in this, is either you wanted to be as a performer or you could sort of be involved in the backstage part or just support other men who were going through the same situation. And by doing that, I simply collected probably over 90 names and numbers, and I then put out a social media call which went around, and the rest was history. I had 57 people turn up on the very first rehearsal, and still people were emailing and calling me and wanting to be involved in some way. Even therapists said, look, what you're doing is amazing. This is something that has never sort of been done before on this kind of scale. What you're doing is great. Can I be involved? Teachers were calling me who were involved in mental health. It was just, the call was just amazing. But to do it again, I think I would really look back and reflect upon all of what I've done so far. At this present stage in time, because of the way that project came about, that group of men, in terms of Lambeth's point of view, are no longer needed. They've ticked their box. We've done the play. It's over. But because of the way I am, and I live and work in the community, I'm keeping hold of this group of men, and this group of men want to sustain what they do in terms of the play that they've made, but they want to obviously turn it into a business as well. So there's a lot of ideas that are coming around making this into some kind of formalized business, which I'm so glad that they have got this motivation. So in terms of doing it again, it feels like this group of men are making formalized decisions about what they want to do to continue their work. And I think this would be a great way to reflect upon how they might work again in the future, because there's a lot of people out there, I think, in the community who want to support what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that sounds great that the work is going to continue, because I feel like very often when we do have discussions around mental health, I think black men are usually excluded from the conversation, or we don't really involve them in the conversation as much as we should. And I think that could be down to, you know, stereotypes that black men are strong. They got everything under control. They don't ever feel like, you know, they're not in touch with their emotions. So I feel like having a dedicated platform dedicated to black men and their mental health is very much needed. I mean, do you feel like stereotypes and cultural ideas about black men have damaged their mental well-being? Or, I mean, what's your thoughts? Because, you know, like especially in Caribbean communities, we're taught, you know, black men must be hard. Don't be soft. You can't
men
be soft.
Don't cry.
Yeah, men don't cry.
That was even, you know, that tune, wasn't there, Patrick, back in the day? I used to dance to.
Yeah. We all did.
You know, or if you're upset as a young boy, you know, your dad might be like, what are you crying for? Yeah. Stop that. Yeah. You know, so do you feel like those sort of things have been have been damaging to black men's mental well-being? Or
absolutely. I mean, it's something that is, I think, a lot of men can relate to. And it's, unfortunately, it's just really sad because we don't have the spaces and places to go to be relaxed and let that go. And I was really surprised by listening to the men do a check-in and a check-out when we meet to run our group. And the comments that I'm hearing is that, oh, this is the first time I've actually been. I've been to a lot of group workplaces, but this is the very first place I've been to where men seem to be real. There's no mask here. There's no fronting here. People are just being real. Men are coming in quite vulnerable and emotional, and other men are holding them. And these men are aware that this process that they're going through is rare. And I think that's what we need more to sort of help remove those pressures that men are. Men are carrying so much weight, and we need more spaces and places where men could just be themselves. Because if some of these men were here in this radio interview, they would tell you what it's like to be in that group and just to just breathe and allow themselves to be themselves without anything. And they've been noticing that, and the friendships and the bonds have just been such a joy to see these men leave each week and attend each week with other men that they've met and form these kind of bonds and friendships. It's just been great.
I mean, one of the questions is about the role of services in Lambeth. And we're working with Lambeth Public Health on doing this series of shows. What more do you think, from your perspective, should be done around promoting, getting more black men to either use the current services or even new services? What's the big issues facing black men in Lambeth and Brixton?
I think the black men are not in the spaces where decisions are being spoken about. And I think they need to be there. That's one thing that they need to do, is just to be there. Obviously, that's very difficult, but they need to be in the spaces where these discussions are being had about themselves, whether that's from there is obviously service users, I understand that, but I went to a recent meeting. It was an AGM of a particular company in Lambeth, and they had their AGM meeting, and you know, I was recommending that some of the men from my group be part of the board, the committee, the service users kind of group, and I was shocked by their response. I was shocked by just the lack of kind of awareness that they have about real people in the community, and that this is a resource that they could tap into if they wanted to. I think I am disappointed in the services, but on the other flip side, you know, here is an opportunity for change. And I think from what I can see with this group of men and what they want to do, they do want to make that change. And so I really feel strongly that they should, and I say they, this group of men and other men, be in these spaces, because sometimes we're being talked about and nothing gets done. It's to us, but not with us. With us, without us scenario.
And I know that as an arts practitioner, that is your DNA as an arts practitioner. What more could be done around the whole stuff around using arts and culture around influencing consultation processes so people... So black men and a wider community, can their views are taken seriously. Because what was powerful about your event when we had the Q&A top conversations, and also allowing the audience to participate in the process, was really good consultation. You can have a consultation meeting where you give out news, you give out papers and a report, and then people don't turn up. But your event, it was a full house. You know, and you know, you could have the same audience talking about policing or education or housing,
any topic,
or climate change, yeah, whatever it is. You know, yeah, what I mean? So, what more could be done in terms of using your practice of art to round community engagement for statutory services, And how can we get the community out? If you were doing this play 5 years ago, would you have the same level of interest and response?
Well, I know that when I work on any particular project, I tend to make sure that the community know about it through the usual network. So I would ensure that I get a good audience there to witness what is going on, because of my LinkedIn networks in the community and advertising and marketing. I'm very good at that. So I do strongly feel that I would get a good audience to come to any event that I'm doing. But in terms of the consultation, I think what needs to change is that we need to be creative in the way that we approach things. I've been to too many consultations where it's very much from a top-down kind of way, that there is no sort of creativity in the room in terms of how we approach and use a method to engage real people. I just think we're out of date in the way that I've seen practices going on in Lambeth. They should involve the arts much more. They should involve the creativity, the spirituality, the whole soul of our Africanness. I believe if they're reaching out to us, then we should use those ingredients and what we know and what we feel as part of the process. And if it's anything other than that, then I think we're going to be just doing the same old to our people, where we're not responding. We're not getting everybody. We're only going to get a section amount of people. We need to work in creative, holistic ways to engage people on a real basis.
So what next steps? What are your plans for the future then?
Well, with the group, I'm just going to be trying to bring in as many people to kind of guide and support what the group's endeavours are, which is to set themselves up in a formal way. That's one of the things that they want to do. So I want to sort of spend time doing that with them. There are plans that they want to do further performances out of London. Again, support them to do that. I've been training them to facilitate. So what you saw me do in the play, I've been training three other members so that they can do that themselves, so that the whole production can be mobile and without me, which is what I like to do when I'm working on productions. So for this group of men and this project, we're going to see a lot more from them. I am still connected to lots of projects that are happening that I use my arts, culture and heritage to work on. I've just finished completing a Windrush project with Age UK, and we're planning to submit another bid for the next round for next year, Windrush. So that's in development. I've got the 81 project, which I'd love to come back and be interviewed again another time about that. But essentially, that's a community-led collaborative commemorative project, shining a light on the 40th anniversary of the 1981 uprisings. And over the last 2.5 years, I've been working with community groups, tenants, housing associations, businesses, residents, to look at how we can make a program that celebrates and commemorates the 40th anniversary of the 1981 uprisings. So at the moment, we've got a sort of a consortium steering group of 76 members that have been working on a sort of self organizing kind of basis, and we've identified some themes, we've produced a manifesto, we've come up with a theory of change, and the last week we've submitted a expression of interest application to the Heritage Lottery for just over £1 million to do some research. So we're hoping that that will come through.
Sounds like a jam-packed 2020 for you, making lots of progress and headwaves in the community. Before you go, Tony, I know you touched on, when you first came in, you spoke about your own family members with their own mental health issues. Now I wanted to ask you, as the family member who has it together, what is it like to see a family member go through something so horrible for such a long time? I mean, how do you stay strong? And I'm sure loads of our listeners could relate to you, because perhaps they're the only one in their family that is sort of carrying the burden of, you know, maybe providing or looking after everybody else. Who looks after Tony? And I mean, how do you stay so strong? And what advice would you give to people in a similar situation to yourself?
So the conditions that I saw within my family, I suppose I saw those things from when I was a teenager, essentially. And all of it has sort of impacted my life in some way, looking back. The only thing that I would recommend to others is that you do have to look after self. Because I had to look after myself during those times when it first impacted me and first aware of what was going on. And really, just to try to understand what does that mean for me and how I felt. And I remember very much back in the early 80s when my sister first got caught up in the mental health issues. I didn't understand, being the youngest in my family, what that really was. But as the years rolled on and I realized more and more what was going on, it was really just to offer as much support that I could do for her, and just so that she knows that I'm there, even though I don't feel I did much, but she knew that I was there if she wanted to contact me, or I could go and visit her. But how do I look after myself? Well, I've got my family and my children that I share lots of love with, and that's my support, really. But for other people, I think the very first thing I would recommend is to look after self, find your passion, you know, find the things that brings you joy, the things that you want to do. Some of us are not in the right place, doing the right jobs, and that causes lots of conditions upon us. I was very selfish in my teenage years, because I realized the power of the arts and what it was and how it could work. And I, like I said, stuck my head in the sand and used the arts to learn about others and learn about myself. And once I was equipped with that, and then turned it inwards and started to work on my own community, because I see the oppression and the suffering. And I just try to do as much as I can. But essentially, it's about looking after yourself, doing the things that you're able to bring you joy, that motivate you, that make you happy. Look after self, and then I believe you're more able to work with others.
Absolutely. And before you go, where can people reach you online if they want to be involved in your arts project, or if they just want to sort of send you a nice message as one of our community champions? Where can they reach you on social media?
So I'm on Twitter, which is my name, Tony Seeley. I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm also on Facebook. But my website, you can just get me at tonyseeley.com, and that's spelled C for Charlie, E for Eddie, A for Apple, L for Lima, Y for Yankee.com, TonySeeley.com. You'll be able to get me there, and we can communicate. But it's been a real pleasure coming in and speaking to you all, and I wish you all the best of luck.
Likewise, it's been an honour to have you in the studio, and thank you so much for sharing so much of your work and also your personal life with us. We are sure it's going to help somebody out there.
Definitely, and keep up the good work, and you're doing some fantastic work in South London, and just keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Colourful
Lambeth Mental Health Radio Show.
Colourful Radio.